Well, hello. Last week we learned in Chapter 37 of the 1955 Kahlua Study Series how to bear witness to God in action. Very, very important to learn how to be a beholder. Throughout all the Infinite Way writings, again and again and again, we were told to be a beholder. But now, perhaps we are learning that it's not enough to walk around and just think the thought, I'm a beholder. No, it really has to do with first sitting in your meditation and learning to stand stock still and be a beholder as this presence flows. And so last week, Joel told us that this was a step for advanced students. To no longer be in that place where we want to change the bad pictures into good pictures, but to be in that place where we do not hate, fear, or love anything in this world, in our meditation, to be able to sit in our meditation without any attachment to this world, to be so still that we can feel the movement of spirit, we can witness God in action. And so our function, he says here in chapter 38, which is called Bear Witness to the Universal Nature of Illusory Error. He says our function in life is to be that of a witness, a beholder, disregarding appearances and always seeing God in action, no matter what the form, outline, or condition may appear to be. Through this inner vision, we bear witness to the omnipresence of the Christ, of the activity of God in human consciousness. And so we do this first in our meditation. Then later we learn to do it with eyes open, so that we are this consciousness of a witness. However, we are told in this chapter that that's only half of the spiritual healing principle. And if we only practice that half, with which many of us, I know, from talking to you and listening to you, that's what we've been doing, practicing only half of the principle. And therefore, he says in this chapter later on, we do not demonstrate the principle because we only have half of it. It is absolutely 100% accurate that we have to practice the second half. We also must learn how to bear witness to the universal nature of illusory error. And this chapter is going to give us the second half of the principle so that we can demonstrate the kingdom of heaven on earth. The world as such has not discovered the nature of error. But you and I are going to discover it and prove it. So, according to the world, all the time that you are seeking good, you are the very devil causing evil. And therein lies the ignorance of all religious teachings, so that even when they declare, God is all, God is everywhere, equally present, God is perfect, God is love. God governs you. God guides you. God directs you. Even when they declare that, they cannot demonstrate it. That is why I take offense at those who come online and declare these absolute truths and are demonstrating poverty, sickness, and lack and limitation, because they're teaching others to demonstrate poverty, lack, limitation, and sickness. No, unless they have the second half of this, unless you have the second half of this, unless I have the second half of this principle, I cannot demonstrate abundance. I cannot demonstrate God's life. I cannot demonstrate God's supply. I cannot demonstrate God's companionship. I cannot demonstrate God in action unless I somehow attain the second half of this principle. So you see, it's really pretty important, isn't it? All right, to repeat, even when we declare God is all, God is perfect, God is love, we cannot demonstrate it. Because we are still in as much trouble as if God weren't all those nice things, and as if God were a billion miles away from us. And the reason is this. Religious teachings ascribe goodness to you, and you have no goodness. You are not spiritual. If instead of bearing witness to your goodness and your perfection and your spirituality, as is done in metaphysical teachings, if you will bear witness to God in action, you will immediately bring about a change of some kind, and a change for good in your experience. All right. We're going to get into, or he's going to get into, impersonalization. He came out 4 years after this when he learned that people weren't understanding this, and devoted 1959 to teaching impersonalization and nothingization. But here he is giving it to this class. And remember, he warned us, we students do not like to hear about the nature of error. We would rather float on a cloud thinking, God is all, God is love, God is beautiful. At the same time, we're sick and penniless. But you had better learn to like to hear about this if you want to practice the full and complete principle, which will give you the demonstration. So let us understand that God is the only good. God is the only activity of good. God is the only law of good. God is the only cause, and God is the only effect. There is no me. There is only God. God itself, within itself, expressing itself unto itself. And so you must bear witness to God as the life of individual being, the law, the cause, and effect of individual being. When you have done that, you have begun your spiritual development. But as long as you are using words like he, she, and it, I, me, and mine, you are trying to spiritualize form. You are trying to spiritualize an illusion of life, and it cannot be done. God alone is good, and beside God there is none other. There is no me, he, she, or it. If only you can see with spiritual vision, you will see that it's God in action. You will see that it's God in manifestation. It is God itself. Then when you see God instead of an it, he, or she, it, he, or she begins to take on more nearly the appearance of God being. And you start this first in your meditation, as we were told last week. First, we start in our meditation seeing God in action. Then later, with our eyes open. So, the first half of the principle is God alone is the activity of all being. God alone is the soul and the purity and the perfection of all being. There is no me, he, she, or it. This is bearing witness to God in action. All right, if you hear what I hear, it means you must forsake all for me. You can no longer see a me, a he, a she, or an it. You must see only God as individual being. And that's only the first half of the principle. You perfect yourself in proportion as you bear witness to God in action and realize God, God alone, is being. Or as he must have said it, since these are all capital letters, you perfect yourself in proportion as you bear witness to God in action and realize God, God alone, is being. Now, this one step will begin to bring changes in your experience, but it will not bring the final and complete harmony or even the demonstration of spiritual power in your life. This of itself will not do it. That's only half, and it's incomplete. It'll bring about some change, but it won't bring your freedom from the thoughts and things of this world, not completely. And the reason lies in the inability to accept what we know about the nature of error. Now, this is very important. You underline this paragraph, you circle it, you put a star next to it, you cut it out and put it on your wall. You must incorporate this next paragraph. Supposing I tell you that it becomes necessary not merely to bear witness to God in action, but it becomes necessary to bear witness to the nature of error in order to bring the final demonstration of harmony into your experience. In other words, if I were to be in my meditation, realizing only the allness of God, without any knowledge of the nature of error, I wouldn't even achieve half the demonstrations to which I am entitled. And the reason is this. Just as you are not good, so you are not evil. Just as you are not good, neither are you a sinner. Neither are you the one who is poor. Neither are you the one who contracts a disease or contacts one. It has nothing to do with you. And no amount of right thinking that you do will ever solve your problems. Because your wrong thinking didn't cause them. And your right thinking won't cure them. There is only one thing that will bring an end to the discords, or that will bring demonstration. And that is an understanding of the truth. The first half of the truth that we must understand deals with the fact, don't call me good. There is but one good, and that's God. And the second half is, now also do not call me evil. I don't care that you saw me sick. Do not call me evil. Don't do it. I had no more to do with it than I have to do with the opposite. When I was good to somebody. When I was good to somebody, it was the activity of God through me. When I was evil, it was the activity of mortal mind. The human sense, the physical sense, material sense of life. The structural sense, a sense of separation from God. It is a universal thing. This thing called error. If you saw a thief, take your thought immediately off of him and realize that the universal belief of a selfhood apart from God is not a power. Whatever the form of error may be, it isn't his error. It is a universal belief. So the first half of the principle for spiritual healing, for spiritual consciousness, for spiritual freedom, is to impersonalize all the good that you see and to recognize, to be a witness of God in action. There's no person here doing good. There's no person. I am seeing God in action. And in your meditation, you really do see God in action. And then later, with your eyes open. The second step is you impersonalize all evil. There's no person doing evil because there's no person. This is impersonal. Mortal mind or world thought or impersonal universal belief. And so when you see the good, it's impersonal Christ without a person. And when you see the evil, it's impersonal mortal mind without a person. So where is the person? Turn the page back where we started. There is no me. There is no he. There is no she. There is no it. Where is the person? There is none. And so the secret in the two halves to this step is to completely impersonalize individual being, whether good or evil. When an individual comes to us for help, I wanted to say up here where he says, take your thought immediately off him. It isn't his error. It's a universal belief. Yes, we talked a week or two ago about, and I made that talk about taking the error out of the world first, and then nothing is in it. Remember? And so he's saying the same thing here. Take the error out of the person, and then get rid of the person, and you're left with God. You've got to take these two steps. So he says, when an individual comes to us for help, first thing that you must do is bear witness to God in action. Now, how you do that is you go within and you recognize God is the only presence, the only law, the only cause. So let me step aside and bear witness. Watch, behold, God in action. And then you make that contact. First thing that you must do is bear witness to God in action. Bear witness within yourself to the realization that invisible right here is the Christ, the activity of Christ, and the law of Christ. The Spirit of God is in action, even though appearances testify otherwise. And now for the second half. What of this appearance? This is the one illusion, the one universal belief of separation from good. This is the one universal belief of a law apart from God. Now, Father, reveal thyself. And then we wait. We wait. You see that? You see what you're doing? You are impersonalizing. That means you're getting rid of the person in your meditation. A person calls you, hey, Bill, I've got this arthritis in my elbow. Will you help me? Sure, I'll help you right now. Let me go to work. Hang up the phone. I sit down. What do I do? The first half of the step, he says, bear witness to God in action. Whatever scripture reminds me, whether I say, no answer to this, thy grace is my sufficiency. God is the only being, the only cause, the only power, the only law. There is only one. That's the first half. And now the second half. What about this appearance? This is the one illusion. This is a universal belief in two. But I realize there is no person here. That's a belief, a concept. I just stated God is the only presence. So this that I'm seeing, it can't be a person. There can't be God and a person. And so now I drop the person. Father, reveal thyself. And then I wait. You see that? There's two steps. You can't leave either one out. If you leave out the first half, you've got a person that can be good, don't you? You've got to impersonalize that. Make it so there's no person, there's only God. And the second half, if you don't do it, you've got a person that can be sick, or bad, or evil, or lacking, or poor. You've got a person. You've got to impersonalize that. Once you've impersonalized the belief in good and evil, there's nothing left but God. And then you rest in it until you feel it. And then your work is complete. But he's going to say pretty much the same thing here in a little while. So, the very moment that you stop personalizing good, you start the flow of blessings. But, the moment you take the second step and you stop personalizing evil, you complete the picture. This is the one evil, the one sense of self apart from God, and it isn't a presence or a power. It has no one in whom or through whom to operate. Now we understand that. I used to read that in the writings. It has no one in whom, on whom, or through whom to manifest, and I thought, what is he talking about? But now I see. Because there's no person. It has no one in whom or through whom to operate because there's no person. And that's the treatment for any discord. There is only God. When you see an individual showing signs of deadness, sin, or disease, don't be concerned with them. That's an appearance. Who's an appearance? What's an appearance? The person. Personal good or personal evil. That's the tree of knowledge. You're looking at it. So, don't be concerned with them. That's an appearance. That appearance doesn't concern that individual. It concerns the universal sense of an individual. In that moment, you have a new life. And the entombed has been resurrected. You see that? You can't make it any plainer than that. That appearance doesn't concern an individual. It concerns a universal sense of an individual. There's no individual there. Ta-da! I don't care if it's your wife, your grandmama, or your little grandbaby. There's no person there. Don't tell me, oh, isn't this little baby so smart and so cute and so this. You're personalizing. If you've got that half of the equation, which is good, personal good, you have just thrown the door wide open to personal evil. Now next week, oh, the baby's got cholera, the baby's got whooping cough, oh, the baby's got pneumonia, oh, the baby's got... Well, yeah, who opened the door? So you see, we really do have to forsake our entire family. But we don't forsake them by running off to live in a monastery. We forsake the illusion about them. There's no person there. And then we do what he says here. You bear witness, regardless of appearances, to God in action. God is the life of this individual, the mind, the soul, the spirit. God is the only law operating here. God is the only being. God is the only cause. God is the only effect. This is a spiritual universe, the product of a spiritual creative law and being. Thus you are bearing witness to God in action. But then you have to take the second step and say, aha, but what of this sin that I am beholding? What of this evil? I won't deny it, but I will deny it as a part of this individual. I will accept only that it is a universal belief of a selfhood apart from God, and it has nothing to do with this individual. There is such a belief even if there were no individuals on earth. So you see, we take it out of the individual being. Take it out of individual being. Impersonalize it. Take it out of the person and then throw away the person. God is infinite individual being. That's what he just said. God is the life of this individual. We don't get rid of the individual because God is individual being. We get rid of the person that can be good or evil. We take it out of the individual. You understand that? We take the good out of the individual and see only God there. We take the evil out of the individual and see only God there. And when both parts have been taken, you complete the picture, he says. You experience the flow of blessings. So, we have in the fabulous story of Adam and Eve, a perfect world, a perfect universe, to all outward appearances. But here also is the potential belief of a selfhood and a creation apart from God. And the first man who comes into the world takes on that belief. The belief must have been here, must have been there for him to have accepted. It must have been there before he got there. Where the belief came from, Joel says, I don't know. And none of us do. I have my own feeling about that. And my feeling is that when we were created, you and I individually decided we didn't want to, well, we decided we wanted our own individual separate existence, which is explained in the other story of the prodigal son as we left our father's house. We said, God, I want my own life. Take a hike. Now, the only way you can have your own life, since you're one with God, is to create an illusion that you're separate. And so I think we took the belief of separation, I think we took it on ourselves willingly because we wanted a separate life. I'm not going to come under God's authority. I want my own life. Let me have it. And in a universe of perfect freedom, okay, you got it. I also feel that the only way we could ever really be consciously aware of our oneness was to fall asleep and experience a sense of separation. Because as we awaken now, and we come into the conscious remembrance, really, of our oneness, it's ours. It's ours. So, that's one theory anyway. But Joel says, where the belief came from, I don't know. But do you see where it's a belief? If you could take the belief, the universal belief, out of the person, whether you're seeing good or whether you're seeing evil, they're both the universal belief because they're both from the tree of knowledge of good and evil, from this one original universal belief, which was here before man was. If you can take that out of the person, on the good side, seeing that it's God, the activity of God, God in action, and witness that. And then on the negative side, seeing that it's a hypnotism, trying to get you to believe in a person, and then throw the person out, and see only God. Either way, with those two steps, you complete the picture. And the picture is oneness with God. And so those two steps are needed. You can't leave either half of them out. It won't work. And many of us tried to go with just the first half of the step, didn't we? For a long time. So any of these things can be nullified, especially in the experience of those who would like them nullified. And by the handling of error as a universal claim, instead of your error or mine, instead of pinning it on a person, by ignoring the appearance of this and that person, not ignoring the claim, never ignore the claim, but ignore the person. Handle the claim through realizing that this claim is not personal. It has nothing to do with the person. It has to do with the universal sense of a selfhood apart from God. Again, I wrote, take it out of the individual, then realize its nothingness. Now remember, Joel told us way back there several chapters ago, the whole thing clicked for him. The whole thing clicked for him when he read in a story about Buddha, one paragraph that said Buddha asked himself, how do I take this error out of the world? And that did it for him. Remember him saying that? He's trying to hand the same thing to us right here. How do you take the error out of the world? You take it out of the person. You take it out of the condition. You take it out of the world. You take the error out of the individual. Because God is individual being. And so when you know that God is individual being, and God is about God's business, you don't have to help God over there, do you? And so when you look over here, and you've removed the error from that individual being, and you recognize it now as just a universal belief, well, God's individual being, but God's not in that universal belief, so I can drop that too, can I? So now there's nothing left for me to do but sit still and witness God in action. And when I feel that presence, I feel that spirit, I feel God's activity, the work is done. The work is done. But it's necessary to do what Buddha did and take it out of the person. And then throw away the person. There's no personal good, there's no personal evil, because there's no person. If you were dealing with a law of infection, a law of contagion, you would have to not blame your patient for it. You would have to get back and say, if God is law and God is infinite, there can be no law of disease, no law of infection, no law of contagion. This is only a universal belief. And it's also true with old age, he says. You would be surprised the wonderful work I have seen among people under the claim of old age. The moment it was brought into realization that age has nothing to do with a person. No person can be older than another person. Because God is infinite person. See that? Underline that. Circleize that. Circle that. God is infinite person. That's a good word. I like that word. Circleize that. Yeah, circleize that. Maybe it'll help you to realize it if you circle it. Circleize it. Okay. God is infinite person. You see that? See that? Age has nothing to do with the person, because there isn't any. God is infinite person, or God is individual being. God is the only person appearing as individual being. So we are all God. We are all the same age as God. Yes, I wrote in the margin here, since God is individual infinite being, and there's only one, then there can be no human being. If God is individual being, then it's God being, not human being, right? So bear witness to God in action, regardless of what condition you see on earth, regardless of what condition you see in a person. Bear witness, first of all, to the truth that God is this individual being. God constitutes all there is to this being. God is the creative principle. God is the maintaining and the sustaining influence. Bear witness to God in action. And as you drive on the road, as you walk through the city, watch. Watch. Bear witness to the fact that here indeed is the very Christ. And then as your mind jumps up and says, oh, but this doesn't look like it. Not the horrors that I'm seeing. Then take the second step. Remember the second half of this. And bear witness to the fact, no, I am seeing the effects of a universal sense of a self apart from God. I'm seeing the effects of a universal belief. Such beliefs, being only beliefs, are not power. They do not have the activity of God behind them. And that's probably the one I realize most in my meditations. They do not have the activity of God behind them. I take them out of the world, out of the person, and I recognize there's no spirit in this, there's no God in this, the presence is not in this. So there's no activity of God in them. There's nothing to support them. They're nothingness. And in that way, I impersonalize and then nothingize them. But you do that to both the bad and the good. 3/4 of the world is suffering from theology that God is punishing us for our sins. Even in this infinite way work, Joel says he finds 3/4 of the people writing a letter and saying, well, of course, I suppose it's really my fault. I suppose I've done something. I'm being punished for something that I have done. Now, that's 75 out of every 100 people. There's, right now in the mystical principles list, there's 165 people. So that would be almost 100, well, over 100, maybe 125 or something of those people would be saying, well, I suppose it's really my fault. I suppose I've done something. I'm being punished for something that I have done. And only 50 of them would be not saying that. Now, this is after 9 years of the infinite way, 8 years, 9 years. He's still finding 75% are suffering from this theology. Friend, says Joel, friend, there's no finer way to keep you in bondage to sickness for the rest of your life than to believe you are being punished for something. There is no God of punishment, period. Now, we're going to get into sowing and reaping here. You see, the law of as he sows, so shall you reap operates in this wise. If you are a human being, every belief that you are accepting about matter, materiality, physicality, is sowing to the flesh. That's humanhood. Look, look, who can come under the law of karma? Well, a human being, right? He can. She can. Me can. But look, 2-3 pages before this, we're supposed to get rid of me and he and she. When you've impersonalized the good and you've personalized the evil, there's no person to come under karma. You not only set yourself free from you set yourself free from the thoughts and things of the world, which is karma. They are one. And so if you set yourself free from the thoughts and things of the world through impersonalizing, you set yourself free from karma, don't you? You live by grace. If you are not a human being, you are God as individual being. That wipes out karma forever. So it's pretty important second half to the step, isn't it? Chapter 37, chapter 38, two halves of one step. There is nothing you can reap out of that but materiality, which ends in death. But if at one given moment you make a transition to where you sow to the Spirit, then you reap life everlasting. And that means acknowledge Spirit as the source, creative principle, law, cause, and effect of all that is. The very moment that you learn to love the infinite invisible, through the realization that it is from the invisible that all visible effect appears, and that nothing in the realm of effect can affect something else in the realm of effect, in that moment you are sowing to the Spirit. Sure, you're sowing to the Spirit the minute you've impersonalized, and there is no more person, only Spirit. You may not reap the full fruitage with the first sowing, for the simple reason that when you first make the declaration, you don't really believe it. You have no inner conviction that God is all in all. Of course, you all agree to that, but there isn't one of us that has the complete realization of it, and that is why not one of us has the complete demonstration of it yet. In some measure, each one of us has intellectually agreed that God is all, that God is life, mind, God is soul, spirit, God is law, substance, God is activity, essence, God is true being. In some measure, every one of us has intellectually accepted that. In some lesser measure, each one of us has achieved the conviction of it and is thereby demonstrating some measure of it. But, you know, it must be a realization. Because remember, realization is demonstration. All right. Now, as we continue to abide to bear witness to the fact that spirit, the invisible, is the cause of the visible, not the visible that you're seeing as good or evil. He means the visible that you're seeing as a witness of God in action. Ah, that's something different, isn't it? The essence and activity. As we continue to abide and bear witness to the fact that spirit, the invisible, is the cause of the visible, the essence and activity, we look to for good and the good of this universe only to the invisible. Yes, we look to this essence and activity for our good and the good of this universe. You see, we permit it to operate through us. All right, so what does that mean? Well, the very moment we could agree on that invisible as the source of our being, we lose the power to give effect to anything that would cause negative contact to each other. Now, what he's saying here is what I was saying. You need to look at not this world that's being shown to you as a universal belief. Let's put this a different way. You need to not look at the universal belief of good and evil and try to see God in it and try to see, well, the invisible is the essence of this, because it's not. The invisible is never the essence and activity of a universal belief. So when he says, you recognize that God, the invisible, is the essence and activity of the visible, he doesn't mean the world you're seeing through the senses of the belief in good and evil. He means in your meditation, you become so still that you witness God in action. You are a beholder of that essence and activity forming itself as the harmony appearing. That visible is what he's talking about. You see the difference? Now wait till you experience the difference. Then you'll know. Then you'll be able to look around and say, yes, God is the substance of all form. Anything that's appearing good or evil is not a form. It's a belief. No person is there. But now, I'm seeing God in action. God manifest as the harmony of my being. And now I know God really is the substance of all form. His form. See, it all comes back, he says, to the same thing over and over and over again. The moment we can begin to realize, even a group as small as we are, that the errors of the Russian government, let's put this in modern times. Well, I'll read it first. Let's start up here. The moment we can begin to realize, even a group as small as we are, that the errors of the Russian government are not really the errors of those men, or even the men who founded it, but actually the universal claim of a selfhood an activity apart from God, a universal sense of separation, then you would begin to see in some measure how these evils would diminish. As far as I am concerned, that is the work that is bringing about changes in consciousness. Now, we in the Kailua study must now add in this meditation, which he just gave us, to set the terrorists free. We must pray for our enemies, as our Master Christ Jesus commanded us. Otherwise, we are not following Christ. So we have a new meditation here. We must begin to realize, as a small group, that the errors of the terrorists are not really the errors of those men, or even the men who started it, but actually this universal claim of a self or an activity apart from God. This is a universal sense of separation. Then we will begin to see in some measure these evils will diminish. And so there's another meditation in case you didn't have enough. Now he says, in my prison work, I have seen miracles take place, such as even if I told them to you, you wouldn't believe them. And I've done a little prison work myself, so I know what he's talking about. Now, over here on the next page, he quotes Science and Health, which is by Mary Baker Eddy, Christian Science. Man has no mind but God. And so he says he was doing prison work in New York, but he didn't know why he was doing that prison work. In the beginning, he was going there because there was sin-filled thought, and little me was going to do something about it. But, you know, if you read this, he had all kinds of problems, and the books were like wanting to slap him in the face, he felt. And he, because he was practicing one thing, and yet feeling another. And it's hard to live a dual life if you've ever tried it. So he said he went back and he tried to get help from his teacher, but his teacher was busy and he studied and he studied. Finally, he saw the whole picture. When he realized there is no sin-filled thought except the human belief. See, he was personalizing, wasn't he? That's why he was having such a trouble. Because he was fastening the illusion right onto a person. And at the same time trying to practice principles which would heal and uplift them. And you can't have both. So, man has no mind but God. There can be no such thing. It can't operate. And do you know something? At the end of 2 years of this carrying this realization into prison, 200 men were attending the service, and we had 15 men inside the prison doing healing work. It all came about through the awakening to the realization that we don't go to prison to heal sinners. Sin is a belief in a self apart from God. It's a belief that man has a mind apart from God, and a body apart from God, and a will apart from God. In other words, it's a belief in man, a person, not God. Certainly, one individual in the realization of beholding, witnessing God in action, and not man, number one, and then number two, witnessing error as a universal illusion, changes the whole work. I tried to tell this to students. Because unless our students recognize this, they will not do the greater works. People wonder. They wonder that crowds come to hear the message of the infinite way. Large classes, they wonder how it's done. And I say very honestly and very frankly, it has nothing to do with me. It has nothing to do with books. Ah, but it does have to do with bearing witness to God in action, the first half, and bearing witness to evil as universal illusion, taking it out of the person and seeing it as nothingness. And so in this work, wherever I go, I am sure that people feel the lack of condemnation in my consciousness, that I hold nobody in any form of error. Not one of us is responsible for the sickness, sins, poverty, or lack that we find ourselves in. We are only responsible in the degree that we have not achieved the realization, first, of God as individual being, God as our individual being, and second, of all error as a universal illusion, with no presence, power, or law, or cause. Do you see that? So you might as well just tell yourself, all of you in this class, you are not responsible for the error. I am not responsible for the error. But I am responsible for practicing the principles in these two steps. Well, that lifts the burden of guilt from everybody. They feel that sense of go and sin no more, even though it's never said to them. So this is a work of a revelation of universal truth. Accept it or reject it. That's your individual demonstration. But on my part, I am beholding God in action, and that I am beholding the activity of a universal illusion trying to appear as sin, disease, death, lack, limitation, or person. And with those two points, my work is done, whether in class, in the healing work, or any other part of my ministry. Now, regardless of who is humanly right or humanly wrong, that's not your function. Living the infinite way, we are not entitled to judge, criticize, or condemn. Because if you do, you're seeing a person. You can't see a person and impersonalize. Did you think when he said you must impersonalize and nothingize that you could somehow impersonalize and still have a person? You can't. You can't. You must lose your life to find your life. You must forsake all of them to find God. And all this is an internal, in your consciousness, transition. But we are entitled to this, he says. We're not entitled to judge, criticize, or condemn, but we are entitled to this. If I present this truth to you, and then over and over and over and over, you are ignoring this truth, and you're going to live your own life, your own way, and your will be done, undoubtedly the time will come when I'll say, look, please don't take up my time. There are enough people in the world ready to give up themselves for the self. So you either come into line or cut me free to work with others. And he will do that, and he has done that. I'm not probably as hard on that as I should be, but maybe, who knows, as I go along, maybe I'll get a little tougher. Okay, I will do that, he says, and I have done it, and I'm still doing it over and over again, not with judgment, not with criticism, but they are just these individuals who, for the moment, can see no higher than their own will, their own desires, their own ego. Now, I come also to those of my own household, says Joel. I do not go out into the world to carry this message. I go only into those places where I am invited. I will sit right here in this room and let the Father lead those to me. Or I will travel to those cities where it is evident that there are those assembled and waiting, and who have given indication that they are waiting for this word. Then I will go and be as free in speaking as I am here. But this has not changed the fact. That I am recognizing you cannot ask those who have founded their lives on me, I, and mine, and myself. You cannot ask them to give that up until they are ready for the experience. All right. That's the Christ teaching. You cannot find your life until you lose it. You realize now, impersonalizing had nothing. I used to think, in the early days of the Infinite Way, that And if I sat around saying, God is my supply, God is my supply, and this that is appearing as lack is nothingness, that somehow I could keep my human life and God would add supply to it. Now, didn't you think the same? Sure you did. And you probably even had some supply added. And we thought, wow, we're really rolling along with this thing now. We had no idea, did we? We were children, weren't we? Yeah, now we're adults. Now we come to find out, that's not it at all. Not at all. He means impersonalize. No person, anywhere. I made a talk once, and I said on that talk, there are no people anywhere in the world. I bet the folks that listened to that probably thought I was a little off the deep end there somewhere. But now I come to see his impersonalizing and nothingizing means people. You impersonalize and nothingize people. And places and conditions, for that matter. Until there's nothing left but God as individual being. And this other as a universal belief without God in it. And therefore a nothing. And not only that, but then we have to stand still until we feel only God right here. In the midst of us. So it's not enough to just say it. We have to have the experience of impersonalizing. Impersonalizing ourselves. All right, and so I wrote here, and you lose your life, your human sense of life, by these two steps. First, witnessing God as the good activity. And second, universal belief appearing as evil. Therefore, there is no person there. Both are impersonal. No person. Now, let us see this vision, he says. We behold God in action, but we also behold any and every form of error as universal belief. Those who understand that universal belief is not a power will bring an end to it, and that is taking place on earth today. There are those all over the earth who are consciously realizing that the men who are the instruments for evil are not the evil. And so, in summary, we know now that the spiritual healing principle of the infinite way, that which I have devoted my life to, and perhaps you too, is in two steps. And if you just take the first part, the first step, you will demonstrate only limited harmony and success. You must complete the whole thing. Because if you leave the second part out, you still have persons. If you're going to completely impersonalize, so that you get rid of the person, and you only have God as individual being, then you have got to take both steps, both parts of this principle. And so, the two steps are, number one, witness the good as the activity of God, as individual infinite being. There is no person. And two, see that the error or evil is universal belief appearing as person. There is no person. You see that? Impersonalized means no person. You're left with nothing except standing still as a witness of God in action. God is the only activity. God is the only presence. God as infinite individual being. One being. One. God is one infinite individual being. And that's all that you're left with. And when you're left with that, you rest back and, thank you, Father. You rest back in it. You feel it. You rest in it. And then, your work is done. And somebody calls and says, hey, I don't know how you did it, but the arthritis is gone in my elbow. Thanks a lot. And you say, you're welcome, and hang up the phone. Well, remember this. If you remember nothing else, both of these steps are necessary. These two chapters are two parts to one principle, and it's called the healing principle of the infinite way. Well, my friends, we're getting close now. We have chapter 39, Problems Aren't Problems Anymore. And we have chapter 40, which is called, let's see, what is it called? The second half of Problems Aren't Problems Anymore. And so we have one more set of principles. Problems Aren't Problems Anymore, part one and part two. And then we have completed the Kailua study series. Wow. And then I'm going to make a summary talk and post that. And that'll make 50 talks as promised. And wow, huh? That year went fast. Okay. I love you guys. I know over the next weeks, months, and years, as we put these principles in practice, I will bear witness to God in action right where you are. And I will get rumors of good reports of God doing miraculous things. What did he say? We will see more miracles than anyone else on earth. I fully accept that, believe that, and expect that. And so there's nothing to say except thank you and thank God for this Kailua study series, and more importantly, for the fact that we really can get still and bear witness to God in action. And we really can bear witness to the universal nothingness of error. And we really can die completely to a false sense of self and experience God as our consciousness living itself.